Chapter 19. Spire Albion, Habel Landing. Major Ronaldo Espira, Auroran Marine, walked calmly through the cramped, crowded streets of Habel Landing, dressed in local clothing, carrying a crate marked with the logo of one of Landing's water farms. Though there was much excitement and the buzz of talk and rumour in the Habel, evidently the authorities of Habel Landing had not yet realised the extent of his battalion's incursion into Spire Albion, and no checkpoints or patrols had yet been established. He could still move about in relative freedom. The initial assault had come off with as much success as any combat mission could reasonably expect. He had yet to hear from the assault teams striking Habel Morning, but his marines' months of training in the precision manoeuvre of parasails had paid off handsomely. Already better than 400 of the 500 men under his command had made contact and begun to concentrate, and there had been reports of fewer than 20 men who had failed to target one of the Spire's many ventilation ports properly. It looked as though, barring bad luck, he would have more than enough men to attain his objectives, and if he was able to see the most daring raid in the history of any Spire to completion, his fortunes in Spire Aurora would be secured for life. Espira wove his way through the hectic streets of Landing. Most Habels in every Spire had modified the original spaces as designed by the builders, adding in fortifications, additional housing, more batteries, whatever was needed. But the inhabitants of Landing had done so to an extent that was little better than madness. They had actually divided their Habel's vertical space in half, in effect creating two duplicate levels of the same Habel, one stacked atop the other. It meant that the normally spacious ceilings of a basic Habel had been turned into close, looming things, and they made Espira feel as if the ceiling were slowly coming down on top of him. If that madness was not enough, they had then filled both of those spaces to overflowing with more masonry and wooden construction than Espira had ever seen. The streets had turned from broad walkways into cramped, narrow affairs, where no more than three men could have walked beside one another. Houses and businesses were pressed together wall to wall, and the doorways were by necessity narrow ones. One literally could not walk 20 steps on the streets of Landing without brushing body to body with a fellow pedestrian. This wasn't a Habel. It was a warren for rats. And yet, there were expensive wooden doors on nearly every home. In places, entire homes had been constructed of wood, and they did not look particularly lavish either, being built with a sturdy, bland functionality that suggested the residences of craftsmen and tradesmen. Yet the amount of wood that went into building a single such residence would have sold for enough money to keep a man in food and drink for a lifetime. Rats indeed, greedy, gnawing, thieving rats. Let them flaunt their wealth. Things would change. He stalked through the narrow streets and wound his way down an alley between two buildings to an old, rotting wooden door. He paused to knock at it, three measured strokes followed by two quick ones, and it opened at once. Her Batman, Sark, stood on the other side of it. The fellow reminded Espira of a hunting spider. He was warrior-born, tall, gaunt, with long, slender limbs and hands that seemed a little too large for the rest of him. His hair was black and short and covered his face, head, neck, and what showed of his hands in a sparse, spidery fuzz. Sark had the feline eyes of his kind, one of them set at a slight angle to the other, so that Espira could never be sure precisely where the man was looking.
"What?"
Sark asked. His tone suggested that he would rather have killed Espira than spoken to him. Espira had not become the youngest major in the history of the Auroran Marine Corps by allowing himself to be intimidated by hard men.
"Is she here?"
Espira asked Sark.
"Why?"
"There's a problem."
Sark looked at, or slightly past, Espira, and made a growling sound. Espira lifted his chin and narrowed his eyes.
This is above your pay grade, Sark. Unless you'd prefer to explain to her why you turned away the man who came with a warning of a threat to her plan.
Sark didn't move for a moment, as still as any spider who senses that prey is coming near. Then he made a throaty sound and stepped back from the door, leaving it open. Espira walked in boldly and pressed his crate of vegetables into Sark's hands as though the man were a common servant. Sark accepted the burden, but his crooked eyes narrowed. Espira could feel them crawling over his back as he walked past the batman and down the gloomy hallway to the copper-clad steel door to her chamber. He knocked and waited rather than entering. He was bold, not suicidal. After a moment, a woman's voice said,
"Come in, Major."
Espira opened the door, which moved easily and soundlessly on its hinges, and entered the room beyond. It was a luxurious chamber, a sitting room by design. Lumen crystals glowed in wall sconces. A large sculpture of Spire Albion resided in one corner of the room, with walking space all around it. Opposite the spire was the graceful shape of a large harp, nearly 5 feet high. A trickling fountain that had been carved into one wall made quiet, whispering sounds, and the water fell into a small pool filled with floating flowers and small, slithering forms that could only barely be glimpsed beneath its surface. She sat in one of two chairs near the pool, with a serving table placed between them. She was preparing two cups of tea, her motions calm and precise, somehow ritualistic. She wore a dark blue conservative gown, well-fitting, elegant and expensive. She was neither young nor old. Her lean, predatory features were intriguing, and something in the reserve of her movements whispered that a searing sensuality might lurk beneath a perfectly composed surface. It was her eyes that made Espira uneasy. They were the cold, flat grey of the mists that covered the world, and she rarely blinked. Espira made her a proper and polite bow. She remained still for a moment and then nodded to the second chair. Espira approached and sat.
"I pray you will forgive this intrusion, Madame Cavendish, but it was necessary to speak to you."
Instead of answering, she passed him a cup of tea on a fine ceramic saucer. He accepted it, of course, with a smile, and bowed his head in thanks. Madame Sycorax Cavendish was a very proper woman. Anyone who behaved toward her in any other fashion, so far as Espira could tell, did not survive the experience. So he smiled, waited until she had taken up her own cup, and sipped tea together with her. The tea, he noted, was his favourite. Olympian mint, and braced with the perfect amount of honey. Obviously, his visit had not taken her by surprise. She'd had no way to know he was coming, yet, damn it, she'd known anyway. Her flat eyes watched him steadily over the rim of her teacup. He suppressed a shudder.
"Rinaldo,"
she said. Her voice was extraordinary, mellow, warm, and soft. The kind of voice that could give rest to weary convalescents, or gently lure an aeronaut to his doom on the surface.
"You know I enjoy your visits. Is there something I can do for you?"
She would not be pleased by his news, but there was no helping that.
"Our command post has been discovered."
Her cold eyes narrowed ever so slightly.
"Oh?
A verminositor stumbled across it in the pursuit of his duties, I'm afraid,"
Espira said, keeping his tone neutral, simply reporting objective facts.
"He was captured before he could escape and warn anyone of our presence."
Madame Cavendish arched an eyebrow.
"Captured?"
Espira pressed his lips together for a second, then nodded.
The Verminositor's Guild of Landing requires them to work in pairs. He claims that he was working alone, that he didn't want to split the contract with one of his fellows.
And he volunteered this information?
His story didn't change, even after vigorous inquisition, Espira said. But we are too close to our goals to allow some small mischance to undermine us now. We need to be sure.
I see,
she said. She took another small sip of tea, her expression thoughtful.
You would like me to determine his veracity?
In essence, Espira said. Better safe than sorry.
One might say,
she murmured, her voice silken,
that more foresight would have prevented this unfortunate event from coming to pass.
He'd seen men die just after the woman used that particular tone of voice. Espira took a moment to consider his reply carefully.
One might also say that the view behind us is always clearer than that before. There are always unforeseen problems. The most vital skill a commander can possess is to recognize them when they appear and adapt to overcome them.
Madame Cavendish tilted her head as if considering that statement.
I suppose that is a practical mindset for a military man,
she allowed.
Thus, you have sought out the support of an ally to adapt to this adversity.
Indeed, madame, he said. You know how highly I regard your judgment and your skills. The barest hint of a smile haunted one corner of her mouth.
Major, I know precisely what you think of me.
She resettled her fingers on her teacup and nodded slightly.
Very well. I will assist you.
You are most gracious, madame, Espira said, rising. Time is of the essence, so...
Madame Cavendish's voice came out in two pulses of dulcet music, and the lumen crystals in the walls flickered a sullen scarlet in time with them.
Sit down!
Espira's heart abruptly leapt into his throat, a thrill of something like distilled panic flashing through his belly. He arrested his momentum and clumsily, quickly, took his seat again. Madame Cavendish's mouth widened into a smile, and she said, as if explaining to a child,
"We're still having tea."
Espira's mouth felt very dry.
"Of course, madame. I pray you, please excuse my enthusiasm."
I should think most successful soldiers bear the same burden,
she replied, still smiling. They sipped together for a few more minutes, the silence deafening. Then Madame Cavendish put down her cup and saucer and said,
I trust you have arrangements in place to dispose of the remains once I'm finished.
I do.
Wonderful,
she said. She picked up a matching serving plate, artfully arranged with a number of foods appropriate to the setting, and offered it to him with a smile.
Do have a scone, Major. I made them myself.